Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the In No Hurry podcast. This is your host, Colt Douglas Claiborne. So happy to be back with you guys with another episode. Taking a little bit of a short break to start the year. Life and work have just gotten a little bit hectic, and so had to pull back a little bit on some creative projects that I've been working on, but nonetheless, excited to be back with you guys with another conversation. And this one, I think it's always timely when we talk about money, but this one I'm really excited for. My guest this week is Callie Picardo, and if that name sounds familiar, she and her husband Rosario were on episode 75 back in 2021. We were talking about one of their previous books, and they've got a new book out. It's a 30-day devotional called Healthy Money. It's a journey toward spiritual, emotional, and financial freedom. I think this is just such a great conversation, and I encourage you all to get a copy of this book. It just came out toward the end of March, and I'm excited to share this conversation with Callie because I always love talking to authors about what the heart is behind their book. And I love that question specifically for this conversation because their book really dives into the heart aspect of how we approach money. This book and the conversation really dive into the emotional and spiritual sides of money and how we save, how we view this idea of money and how it affects our lives and how we put it into the context of our lives. And what's really cool about Callie and Roz writing this book together is that they really complement each other in terms of their expertise. Callie has nearly 20 years of experience in finance with over 15 years in fundraising and charitable giving, and also owns her own financial coaching business, while Roz has a theology background, has worked in ministry, has a Master of Divinity from Asbury Theological Seminary. They combine all of that to give you a really healthy perspective from both the financial and the theological side of how to approach money. I'm bummed Roz was not able to join us this time. He had something come up the day that we recorded and was unable to join, but nonetheless, excited to have Callie with us and to share her insights. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with financial expert and author Callie Picardo. Well, Callie, welcome back to the show. This is your second time on. We're missing your husband, Rosario. I wish he could be with us this week, but welcome back to the show. We get to talk about some more of your guys' work and the topic of money. It's exciting to have you back on here. How are you doing?
Doing great, Cole. Thanks so much for having me. And Roz wanted to be on here, of course, and it didn't work out today, but just so excited to share about our new book, Healthy Money.
Yeah, I had a great time talking with you guys a few years ago about money, and we were just discussing before we recorded about just how hard this topic can be for anybody. Yeah. And I know specifically for my generation, millennials, it's especially a really difficult topic. So I'm excited to talk to you. This is called Healthy Money, a 30-day journey towards spiritual, emotional, and financial freedom. It sounds like something that anybody can find practical. Where did the heart for this devotional, this book come from? Was there something that happened in your life, or was it just kind of a felt need that you realized a lot of people were needing, I guess, kind of in that post-COVID era now? And, you know, the money situation was difficult during then. And I think we're still finally recovering from that. But yeah, where did the heart for this come from?
Yeah, we'd written a book before called Money Talks that we were sharing about on your podcast before. And that one's more, it's heart related, but a little more how to. But we know so many people that know what they should do with their money who don't necessarily do it. You know, they know they should have a budget. They know they should avoid debt. They know they should save for long-term purchases. They know they should save for retirement and things like that. But it's not a knowledge thing always. Sometimes there's an underneath piece inside that just needs some inner heart work. And so we really structured this as a 30-day devotional. You know, 30 days, I can do something for 30 days. If you want me to do something for 5 years, I don't know. But 30 days, I can commit to 30 days. And there's a devotion every day with some reflection questions, short and easy with some scripture to go with it. But the goal is to walk through it with God, to let God do, just peel back a layer and see what's going on underneath, whether that's just kind of how we're wired. You know, my husband and I are married. We do finances together, but we are wired differently. We have different personalities, and that impacts both how we do finances and also how we talk about money together. And that can be a stressor in a lot of relationships too. But also looks at how you were raised. I mean, Rez does a lot of premarital counseling, and he always brings me in on those. And one of the questions we always ask couples as they're getting married, well, what did you see? How did you see money handled when you were a child? Was it talked about? Was it a stressor? You know, what were the dynamics around there? Because some of what we've caught from our family of origin impacts how we do finances and then our own life experiences too. And so it kind of does some of that peeling back, naming what's there, but then figuring out, okay, God, how do you want to bring a healthy relationship with money? And so kind of walking through some of the healing as well.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, because it says, I'm reading just kind of the overview of it. It's a 30-day guided journey that takes you beyond your budget and bank balance and into the emotional and spiritual roots of your money patterns. I think that that is something that is often overlooked. I think, you know, we hear a lot about the practical steps of saving and all of that, but a lot of times, like you mentioned, it's hard to reverse course if you don't address some of the roots behind it. You know, if maybe like I know for me, going out to eat had always been like this sort of dopamine rush type of thing. Like, oh, I feel better if I go out and get coffee or go get food. And it's sometimes easier than making food. And it just, there's something exciting about being out in public. There's just like little things that you can maybe point to, like, you know, I know some people, they like to go shopping as maybe a therapeutic type of thing. And they feel that dopamine rush, or just they feel like serotonin or something whenever they go out and they purchase something. And so I don't know that a lot of us spend as much time as we should about addressing those roots. And so I know this is kind of looking at the emotional side of it, but just, I guess, from the top, I mean, some practical ways, I mean, how can somebody identify what maybe some of those emotional or spiritual roots are that lead to some of their money spending habits?
It's got to take the Holy Spirit revealing. So prayer is a big piece of it. And one of my favorite scripture verses to pray is Psalm 139, verses 23 and 24. And it says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there's any wicked way in me. And then don't leave me there, God. Lead me in the way everlasting." You know, it's asking God, okay, search me. Know what's going on in my heart. God, you know me better than I know myself. Where has maybe a lie got internalized that I'll feel better if I do this? Where is just addiction, maybe that addiction to shopping, addictions to gambling, or expenses from other addictions, you know, where has that possibly gotten in? Some even just habits, like where have I just gotten into this habit that's not a healthy, life-giving habit, but it's just become my norm. And so, Lord, have I just gotten off course that needs to be redirected? But it's also asking God, okay, God, how have you wired me? So we've got five different financial mindsets that are part of this book, and we've got an assessment that's free out there. Cole, I can send you the link for that as well to share with listeners. But it's a free assessment to figure out which one fits you. And so everyone's different, and the idea is none of the mindsets are bad, but some of the mindsets are bent towards certain things. So one of the mindsets is a security mindset. That's mine. That's the one that, you know, I'm really good at setting a financial goal and working toward it, you know, steady plodding. I'll do that. I get stressed out by big purchases. Sometimes I don't want to spend money. Like I have some of it, control can be a part of it too. And so, there's that side of it. I mean, maybe it's not a bad spending pattern, but maybe it's just where how much money is in your bank account has become more a source of security than God. And so it can be a pattern. It can be just a heart issue where, you know, if I don't watch it, money can become an idol where I'm depending more on finances than I am on the Lord.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. Yeah. I'm just thinking about even our own situation. I mean, we bought a house last year and, you know, we're trying to pay down some debt. We've got my wife's grad school debt. We've got my own undergrad debt still. And my wife had to buy a car, which I was sharing with you before. We had to buy her a new car back in 2022 because her car just bit the dust and we'd already paid it off. And it was like, gosh, we don't want to take on new debt. And at that time, it was almost more expensive in some cases to buy a used car than it was to just buy a brand new car. And we were like, well, we might as well just get a new car. And so it was unplanned. And now, you know, we're trying to attack the debt and do what we can. We've gone through the Ramsey course and all of that. And, but it is definitely an anxiety thing, especially, you know, for young homeowners or new homeowners where you have all kinds of different expenses that maybe you didn't have when you were renting. And it's very easy for the expenses to add up and catch up with you. And you realize, okay, our bank account is not what it used to look like. And yeah, that's definitely we can definitely, resonate with that emotion. And I've heard, we lead a small group at our church, and, you know, I've heard different approaches from the people in our small group just about how even between couples, how the wife and husband differ in how they spend money. You know, one can be really conscientious about saving and almost to the point where, you know, they want to save to a, I don't want to say obsessive. It's not obsessive at all, but it's like they're definitely more conservative in saving, where mm-hmm. others are seeing, you know, more reasons to spend. How can couples have that discussion and come to a, and maybe even if this is just a single person listening too, I mean, how can yes. somebody come to a consensus where there's a good balance of saving, but also knowing when to spend? Cause you know, I think I don't want people to feel like I would never want to feel personally that I have to just always save. It's like, right. you know, I want to be able to spend on some things that I want to spend it on, but there's a balance where you don't want to just buy everything and put it on a credit card and worry about it later. There's a balance there. So, does the book address that and how, even as you guys, you know, you guys talk about finance and spiritual health all the time. So how would you guys advise couples attacking that conversation and finding that balance of spending versus saving?
I mean, it definitely is a balance. And so for me, the heart's the biggest piece. That's a big part of what the devotional gets to. And it was written very much where an individual could go through it, a couple could go through it together. We were thinking in our heads, oh, you know, the premarital conversations we've had, yeah. as well as like the in the middle of marriage where finance becomes a tension conversations we've had with couples. Small groups could do it. A church could do it. You know, it could be used in a variety of different ways. And there's some spots to be able to pause and reflect as an individual, as well as some questions that can become the point of sharing, you know, at a spot where you can share as much as you're comfortable with, because I know some people don't want to share their finances. But with that spending, saving, it is hard. And different people are wired differently. And I'm definitely in our marriage, I'm the saver. Roz is more the spender. And so we balance each other out in a healthy way. That's good. But it requires that open dialogue and naming some of the stressors as well. And for me, I have to just constantly surrender and say, okay, God, all I have is yours. Lord, I want to trust you more than I trust the finances. You know, and Roz has to make sure he's doing the steady saving as well. And so a big thing that's helped us is to name our values. Okay, what are the things that are most important to me? And the book gets into some of that financial alignment. You know, they always want to check the alignment on my car. When I take it, I just want an oil change. And then I want them to tell me my car is fine. It doesn't.
There's always a bunch of stuff wrong with it. They always found something
else. And so I often it's the alignment. The alignment's off. We need to do a realignment. And for some reason, you have to spend extra money for it. And I was like, is this really something I need to spend money on? Like, what's the major damage if I don't do it? But over time, if the alignment of the car is off, you're going to feel it pulling on the steering wheel. Like you're always drifting when you're trying to go straight. Yeah. And it's going to start to rub those tires wrong. And so those tires are going to wear out faster. And there's just more that happens over time if the alignment's off. And so when you say, God, help me to realign, Lord, send me in the way everlasting. What's that path that you have for me? What are the values you've given me? What's important to me? Okay, Lord, help me to align my spending with that. So for us, giving's a big piece. So we always put giving in first. Then my husband, being more spontaneous, was always doing spontaneous giving, which was always breaking the budget. Well, so we budgeted for spontaneous giving because we wanted to have some money set aside that if a need popped up, we could respond. So we put giving in there and we put savings in there because we want to be able to retire at some point. We'll probably still do ministry, but we don't want to have to worry about the paycheck. So we're trying to save for retirement. But then we've got young kids and we want to do special things with them. And yeah. So for us, setting aside funds to do an annual family vacation, that's something that we want to spend money on because that aligns with our values. And so you can start to ask some of those values questions and then start to see, okay, where might we be off? You know, we've also always tried to live in the neighborhood where our church is. And when Roz and I met and married, we were in a nicer neighborhood because I had a house before we married, but our church was downtown. It was urban. We were doing a lot with the homeless population. And so for us at that point in life, we really felt like the Lord was saying, I want you to move downtown to be near where the church is. So we sold our nicer home and bought a less expensive home that really aligned more with our values and the mission and ministry we were doing. And so if you start to ask those, what do I value? But as I look at where my money's going, what does that say I value? You know, that can be a good litmus test of, okay, what do things line up? Mm-hmm. I mean, another small example is, you know, I don't struggle with alcohol dependency. And so I would have an occasional drink, but then I started looking at how much money I was spending on it, because if you have a drink or two here and there, when you go out, it adds up.
Yeah.
And I just realized I'd rather use that money for something else. And so even though it wasn't an addiction issue, it was a values alignment for me of saying, okay, I'm going to cut out most of my drinking, more just so that I can send that money where I really want it to go.
Yeah. Yeah, that's hard. I mean, we budget how much money we can spend at our favorite coffee shop here in town. And it's funny because every month we load money onto a gift card from the shop, and that's how we do it. And that's also so we don't see a bunch of transactions to Spencer's Coffee in Bowling Green. Mm-hmm. We love them, and we want to, you know, we want to support a local coffee shop, but we also have to limit it. And there have been plenty of months where I go over the budget, and you know, my wife, who graciously takes care of our budget, she basically writes down every expense, and we talk about it together. But we probably need to be talking about it even more than we do. But you know, we really are trying to be more conscientious about, you know, where does our money go and what can we cut out and what can we limit and things like that. And even just realizing, like, I was spending $15 a month on Audible, you know, for books to come through. And I used it a lot when I was a teacher, because I would play books on it and I would count that as an educator expense. And now, like, while I love listening to audiobooks, I don't listen to them as often. And so I was like, yeah, I can definitely pause that for a while or even cancel it. And so little things like that, where even if it's $15 a month, just going through, what do we need? What do we don't need? And it's hard. It's really hard to have those conversations. It's not always fun to talk about money. And, you know, there's plenty of times whenever I'd rather be doing other things, but I realize how important it is. And one of the things that I think your book gets at, I'm kind of reading the bio of it, is talking about financial trauma. Could you define what that is and maybe why that makes some of these conversations so challenging? And then even where it's hard to cut out certain things or reverse course, because I would imagine, you know, if depending on what the details are, it can be really difficult for somebody to reverse course if they've seen something done a certain way or something's just ingrained in them. So how would you define financial trauma, and how can that affect some of these conversations and decisions?
Yeah, it can look different, but you know, trauma is those things that happened to us that really kind of impact us to the core. I mean, whether it's having to file bankruptcy, whether it's a messy divorce where your ex takes everything, whether you even had your fraud and that taken advantage of you and then mm-hmm. been trying to dig your way out of it. It could be just, you know, undoing years of bad financial management, especially if someone else was the one who hurt your credit. I think of trauma as more what's happened to you from others rather than your own life choices, but where you've had those experiences that have just set you back, and then you've had to start to rebuild, and you're coming out from that. But it just, sometimes it feels like it's been such a major setback in life. And maybe it's you lost your job, or you had a medical thing that made it where you couldn't work. And so everything went on your credit card, and it just feels like it's hopeless. Like, I'm never going to get out of this. I'm just not even going to look at the credit card bills because I'm never going to get through it. I'm not going to bother to budget, because even if I didn't spend a thing, it would take me forever to get out of this debt that I'm in now. It'd take me forever to rebuild the credit. And it's stopping to name that hurt, but also to notice how it's impacting you today. But doing it with God, because we have a God who's the God of hope. And so taking it to God and saying, okay, God, here is all this. Lord, I don't even know where to start with stewarding this, but I don't want to stay where I've been. So I don't know if I can ever get where I want to be. Lord, where do I start today? And it's neat because, you know, Rez and I have a lot of friends in recovery, some of them because of that. They have had a lot happen in their life that they're rebuilding, you know, and I've got a friend right now she's finally been able to rebuild her credit score after year of really hard work. And she's now at a spot where she's able to buy a house, and just the joy. And, you know, but she's staying within budget. You know, she's being very conservative on what she's buying. Like, she's done that steady plotting for so long. And so there is hope. But it, some of it takes being around people who have gone through it. There's power in testimony. And yeah. So sometimes hearing the testimonies of others who have overcome trauma as well, but, and are in a healthier spot now, not where they would have been if they weren't, if in most cases without the trauma, but that trauma isn't wasted.
Yeah.
And they've got a story to tell.
Yeah.
I think of Job too in the Bible, who like lost everything.
Yeah.
And like God was able to restore it. I mean, all hope wasn't lost. And that's the hope we have in God. But sometimes we separate our finances from our faith.
Yeah.
And try to approach finances with the best wisdom of this world, or you know, what the latest pop-up Facebook ad is telling us to do, because somehow they're always targeting us with these different spiels. And instead of taking it to God and saying, okay, God, what's your will for my finances? Lord, you know how I'm wired. You know what's happened in the past. God, how do I move forward? What's my next step?
I like that approach of, you know, we oftentimes try to seek out the best advice of this world instead of going to God. And I've struggled with that. And I was kind of sharing with you before we recorded about the heart behind the book that I'm writing. And I have found in my own life, and just talking with others in my generation, that, you know, many of us that are struggling with trying to save for whatever it is, maybe people want to buy a house or start a family, or they want to start a business and they're trying to work their way up, it feels like it's this impossible mountain to climb because of how expensive things are. And I know, like when I taught, especially, almost everybody that I worked with had a second job, teachers. Mm-hmm. And I mean, these are hardworking professionals that felt like they needed to work a second job. And that's the case for a lot of people. Now, some people, it is a passion and they like what they're doing in the second job, but it's also like they need that extra income to feel like it's comfortable. And that was not the case 20, 25 years ago, where so many people felt like, I need to have a second job. Most people, they had one job that paid well and they had benefits and they could take vacations and it was, they lived comfortably. And now even people that work two jobs, sometimes even three jobs, feel like they're barely scraping by, and it can feel like this never ending chase, and it feels exhausting and it can be frustrating. And so I know, like for me, I've struggled at times where it's like, I want to give this to God. I want to be patient, but that's the problem, is that it's really hard to be patient. Yeah. And so, and then with money, it can feel like an immediate pressure that's on you, where I have this bill that's due, otherwise it gets sent to collections, or I've got this and that going on. I've got to pay rent. I've got to pay my mortgage. And, you know, a lot of times those deadlines don't wait for God's timing. And so there's a real life pressure that hits in there, where it's like, okay, God, I want to trust you, but also like, this deadline's coming up, and that can really put a lot of people into anxiety mode. And they maybe try to find gig jobs or go do, you know, certain things to make some extra money. So what advice do you have? I mean, you've done young, you know, you've done couples counseling, and I'm sure this topic has come up, but just anybody who's listening that maybe they feel that pressure and they're working multiple jobs, they've got, you know, several streams of income, and they feel like even with that, they're not even putting a dent into what they need to do. And it feels exhausting. They're almost impatient waiting on God. Sometimes I don't even know what to say to myself, much less other people. Yeah. And it's hard, and not that there's a silver bullet, but just what is your encouragement or advice to people that are living in that headspace?
And I wish I could say, here's a tough question. I know. ABC answer.
I was curious how you would attack this.
Yeah, the truth is there's not. And that's why our hope is that people will take it to God and just say, God, what do you have for me? Because it's going to look different based on different situations. And sometimes those past decisions are truly impacting us today. I mean, if there's a lot of debt that's mounted up, those bills due, all of that, that's hard. And everyone's got a different, I mean, some people have kids they're dealing with too. Some have a spouse. Sometimes it's them on their own. You know, sometimes, you know, single parent working multiple jobs to pay for multiple kids, like that is real. That's hard. And it takes some creativity. And sometimes the creativity is on the income side. Some of the creativity is on the expense side. Some of it's saying, okay, what do I really need to be spending? Some of it's looking, like you said, Cole, like what subscriptions do I have that I really just need to give up for a while? Or, and I love that you were doing the loading things on a gift card for your favorite coffee shop. I mean, where you're not going there, but you're putting limits on it so that it's not going excessive. And the truth is, when we're working so hard, when we're so stressed, it can be really tempting to pay for things of convenience that then hurt us more financially. And so those expenses add up. And so I love the name of the podcast, In No Hurry. It does feel like in the past was a simpler time. You know, they just didn't do as much. They enjoyed more in nature and that type of thing. And I don't know, we can't change the world we live in, yeah, but we can live differently in this world. And so some of it's figuring out, okay, God, what does my lifestyle look like in this season? And I love thinking about things in seasons. That has helped me so much because I'm like, well, you know, that's not what I used to do. Why do I have to do it differently? But I'm in a different season. And it might not be how I do things in the future either. But, you know, the reality is I'm in a season where I've got young kids. So that looks differently. You know, and life's busy and my husband and I are both working and we're trying to figure out how do we do this. And so the temptation can be to eat out, but I've realized my kids, you know, we love breakfast for dinner. So we do a lot of like eggs and toast for dinner, which is a less expensive meal, but it's home cooked and it's easy and quick. And so some of it has just been figuring out what are our new rhythms and patterns. You know, Raz realized he was drinking a lot of Coke Zero and LaCroix and bottled and canned things that cost money. So he's like, you know what? Probably be better for me if I just drank water more often. He's still drinking coffee. We need our caffeine over in the Pardo household. But, you know, he just said, you know, water is going to be better for me anyway. And some of it's hard when the kids are like, Mommy, Daddy, we need this. Well, our first grader had a book fair at school. And so she came home and she said, Mommy, can I have some money for the book fair? And we just said, we tried to get into the rhythm of going to the library.
What a magical time the book fair was in elementary school, though. Just as an aside, my wife and I talk about it all the time. Just we can still smell it when we walk into the Scholastic book fair. It's such a good memory.
Oh, well, then I'm going to dash your memory by telling you what we did with our child, Cole. But we're trying to encourage her with the library. Yeah. Like there's, because they love going to the library and we try about once a month to go to the library to pick out some new books. And so we asked her, well, why do you want to buy something at the book fair? She's like, well, I don't want to be the only one who doesn't. I'm like, okay, we don't want to do something just because everyone else is doing. I said, but if there's a book you really want, you know, I'm okay with you buying one. How much money do you have? Oh yeah. You take out what you've got saved. You know, it was like $5 or $6. I said, we'll give you $4 more to round it up to 10. And she said, well, I don't want to waste my own money on that. I said, so you want to waste mommy and daddy's money? So I said, well, how about this? Take a piece of paper and a pen with you to the book fair, write down the books you really want, because there was an online ordering if we needed to. And I said, well, bring those home and then we'll see if we can get them for the library. If we can't, and it's something you really want, we can buy the book and it can be a gift for a future thing. And so, you know, some of it's stopping and saying, okay, now why do you want to spend this money? Is it because everyone else is, or it just, you saw the ad and it just seemed perfect when in reality, it's like, maybe not. Yeah. And is there another option? You know, there's a beauty when you can enjoy without owning, you know, so often we feel like, oh, we have to have this tool. But I think, you know, growing up, we would borrow tools from others that had them. You know, we didn't have to have every tool in the shed. You know, if neighbors had one, you know, you could borrow, or, you know, the library, you can enjoy a book for free. You know, what does it look like to be able to approach even what we have to own differently? Because then you got to store it and then you got to take care of it. And there's just a lot more headache that comes from owning some things too. I mean, I would love it if life was simpler and I had less stuff. Unfortunately, the kids keep bringing things into the household and I'm like, what did you get now? They gave you what at the toy box at church? This little gizmo, and now we have all these little trinkets all over the house. It's like, okay, I feel like I'm fighting a losing battle some days, Cole, but that's the wisdom I got for you at the moment.
Yeah, that's so funny. As you're talking, I keep thinking about this book that I read a few years ago, and I had the author. His name is Drew Dick. He wrote a book called Your Future Self Will Thank You. I don't know if you've ever read this book, but it's one of my favorite books. And he's really humorous on Twitter. He's a really funny guy. But the book was super practical and it was all about self-control. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that really stood out to me, because I was teaching at the time when I read this, and I was realizing that it was whenever my planning period was, or whenever my lunch period was, I would around that time every day, my brain would kick in and I wanted a soda at that exact time. So he described it as you start a day with a certain amount of reserves and your willpower reserves, essentially. So as the day goes on, stressors happen, things happen, and you start to deplete that willpower. And so what happens usually is if you've given into something around a certain time, your body almost naturally gives in. And I found that it was really difficult. Like I would go into every school day, like, okay, I'm not going to get a soda today. I'm going to break this chain. But as a class would happen and stresses would happen and I, you know, the day would go on and then my body would start to tell me, okay, you need this to recoup. And I was realizing how often I was going to spend $1 or $1.50, whatever it was, on something that was horrible for my body. Yeah. You know, like I'm already stressed and then I'm putting like heavy amounts of sugar and caffeine in my body with this soda. And that's not helping, you know, the stress that I have is probably making it worse. But I just thought that that was such an interesting thing. And, you know, you're talking about like your husband, how he realized he was drinking Coke Zero and all this other stuff and switching to water. It's really hard, I think, for us to have that willpower and self-control. And my pastor preached something recently, and I may butcher his quote, but it was something about how momentum is one of the hardest things to start, but one of the easiest to continue. Like once you've already started that momentum, if you keep going at it, then it's really easy. Like my wife and I have done Whole 30 about four or five times, if you're familiar with that. And we just did it recently in January. And it was like, I was less strict than I normally am. Like I was able to let myself drink these lattes, which have a little bit of sugar and the almond milk in them, but I didn't do it. I didn't drink any alcohol. I wasn't eating grains or anything. And I lost 17 pounds. Yeah. And I just was like, I really like how I feel. And I've not continued eating exactly like that, but I have definitely been more conscientious about how much of the other stuff that I wasn't consuming that I consume now to keep that off. And I realized like, it's much easier for me to continue eating and consuming stuff like that after I've started. And like, I see it happen for 30 days and it's like, okay, I can do that. Like the last time I ate McDonald's was the summer of 2011. I stopped at cold turkey and I've not eaten it since. And if I ever was to go back, it'd probably, you know, be easier to keep going back after that. So, how can people slowly, I mean, I know we talked about kind of the in no hurry aspect of life. And I love kind of thinking about things in that perspective. I mean, things can't be done overnight a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So whether it's saving money or it's, you know, trying to cut things out that you don't need like soda or alcohol or other things, how can people do that slowly and steadily to build that momentum to where eventually it doesn't feel like this large mountain that they have to climb? And maybe that's even cutting into debt where you do it slowly and methodically. Cause you know, if you have thousands and thousands of dollars of debt, unless you get some kind of a cash windfall, like winning the lottery, probably not going to happen overnight. So, what advice do you have in terms of taking at that practically and slowly and kind of building that momentum? I know Dave Ramsey talks about the debt snowball and that's kind of the same idea. So from your perspective, how do you guys see that?
Yeah. Well, that's why we wrote the book as a 30-day journey. It's like, okay, 30 days, you know, I could do 30 days, you know, and it might be even, you know, the soda example. Maybe I just say this week, I'm not doing any sodas. Like if I make it through this week, I'll let myself have soda the following Monday. But then you've started this momentum and then you probably that following Monday, you're like, oh, I'm out of the habit. You know, sometimes it's setting up just a short period of time. And sometimes it helps me to think of things as an experiment. You know, because when I think about, okay, if I make this change, how is my entire life going to be impacted? And it's like, oh, okay, maybe that's a little extreme. But, you know, maybe it's I'm not going to buy any new clothes for 30, 60, 90 days, whatever that is that feels reasonable for you, or whatever that challenge is, whatever that hard thing is, you know, give yourself a time period. And maybe 30 days is too long. And you say for a week, I'm just not going to buy I'm going to make my own coffee this week, you know, whatever it might be, or we're going to cook our own meals this week. This is going to be cook your own meal week. Yeah. And maybe that's too much, or maybe it's, you know, I've heard some people do meatless Mondays to save some money. You know, they eat vegetarian on Mondays, you know, as a way to, you know, cut back some of that expense. You know, there are little things that you can do, short term. You can call an experiment if you want. You can say in this season, here's what we're going to do. And if you set it up as a short-term thing, sometimes that gets over the hurdle of, I can't, you know, that's one of the lies. And one of the things the book looks at is, okay, what are those lies we've internalized? What are those mantras. And sometimes it's the mantra, I can't. Oh, I just can't make it through the day without this. So what is the truth you're replacing it with? And scripture is full of so many good words of wisdom. Some are specific about finances and some are just those things that help us have the willpower. And, you know, you might say, I can't. Well, I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength from Philippians. You know, there's a scripture verse that can replace it. And maybe it's that, oh my goodness, I'm just not strong enough. Like, I just don't have enough willpower. Well, God's grace is sufficient. I mean, God's power is made perfect in my weakness from 2 Corinthians. You know, it's finding that, okay, what is going to be my verse when that craving strikes or when that habit that I've gotten into, you know, flares up? What's going to be my counterattack? Because that, like you said, that momentum's powerful. So what's going to be my, okay, every time I have that impulse, what's going to be my counterattack? What is going to be either the scripture verse of truth I'm going to replace it with, or what's going to be my spiritual discipline that I put in place of that? You know, maybe if you know, you're trying to do more giving, maybe it's every time I don't do that, then I'm going to take that money instead. And I'm going to set it aside to give, or I'm going to bless someone else with that because I'm not spending that money on something. You know, it's figuring out, okay, not just because if you think about the thing you don't want, what are you thinking about? You're just thinking about that thing you don't want. And you can't stop thinking about it. You know, you got to replace it with something healthy and good. And so if there's that, okay, I'm going to do this instead, it can be a powerful momentum. And as you're talking about self-control too, I just couldn't help think that, well, that is one of the fruits of the Holy Spirit. So God, you've told me I've got this as the fruit of the Holy Spirit. I need a little help there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good. I love just thinking about, like, I think that is what helped me succeed with Whole 30 this time, was that I was a little bit less rigid. And so normally, like, the idea of Whole 30, for those that are listening that aren't familiar with it, is you cut out anything that's inflammatory out of your diet. So that's grains, dairy, alcohol, sugars, things like that. And you're only eating whole foods. And so you're really stripping your body of a lot of the processed garbage that we eat, mm-hmm. and you're eating better. And usually your body starts to feel better. And then the idea is that whenever you're done with it, you slowly integrate things back into your diet so that you can identify what it is that maybe is causing you issues. So, you know, at first, maybe you bring grains back and you see, okay, is that causing me issues? If not, okay, well, I'll try dairy and see if that's causing me issues. And then ideally you can pinpoint specifically what it is that you should maybe avoid eating or eat significantly less. And usually what happens is that after those 30 days, when I've done it in the past, I've just gone full force back into eating like I was before, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, easing back into the food. And I think it's because I was so rigid and I was, you know, almost always felt like I was depriving myself of the things I wanted. So I allowed myself to have like the lattes, which were an exception, but I think that allowed me to not think about what I didn't want. And I was able to focus more about like the intentionality of what I was eating. Cause we were getting all of our meat from the farmer's market. We had watched this documentary about really how bad some of the, it wasn't just about this, but it was about how bad, I mean, it talked about how bad some of the food you can get at mm-hmm. stores and certain, you know, types of farms, how they raise their food. And so I was like, you know, we want to make sure that even if we're paying a little bit more, we're getting better quality food. And I think that helped where we were eating higher quality food. And I just was intentional about what I was doing and being mindful of it. So, yeah, I think that's having those kind of short-term goals where it's like, yeah, let's do this for a week. Then maybe I can have a drink, a Coke on next Monday or something. Usually by that time, yeah, like you said, I don't think I want it because I think I want to keep this momentum going. So that's a good way to do it. And it kind of leads into the final question that I have. I always ask this question and I want to ask this in the context of our conversation, but I always love to ask people, like, you know, when your life is in a hurry, what do you do to slow down? I'm sure I asked this to you guys the last time we talked, mm-hmm. but from a financial standpoint, if somebody's kind of realizing like, man, my life is sort of spiraling out of control in a fast way financially. And I know we just talked a little bit about cutting back and attacking it kind of slowly and methodically, but for you specifically, and maybe just even you as a family, what are ways that you guys have done that where maybe you've realized like, okay, some of these expenses are getting away from us, or, you know, maybe we're going out to eat more often than we want because we're going too fast in life. Just mm-hmm. what do you guys do to reverse course there and make sure that you kind of get back on a slower pace, especially from a financial perspective?
I mean, I think some of the things that we do just to slow down in general cause us to spend less money. I mean, aside from like a vacation would cost more money and slow down.
Sometimes that's worth it though.
Sometimes that is an intentional spending that's good. But you know, one of the things we try to do is Saturdays, we don't plan much. Mm-hmm. And so just have a day that's slow. Often we'll bake as our fun thing because the kids like to help me bake and we like to eat it too. And we just don't, you know, on school days, we're in a rush. So it's like, hey, grab whatever you can put in a Ziploc bag and take it in the car and we're going to eat breakfast in the car. I mean, that is how we get out the door and get places on time on school day mornings. But Saturdays, we get to slow down. And so we'll bake together, which costs less than the processed foods. Yep. And then we go to the library on about one Saturday a month just to hang out, look at books. You know, often in the kids area, they have a little game, like a scavenger hunt game. And so we can come home and try some of the things. You know, we'll read, you know, we've got lots of books around, like reading's free. And so to get to do that, or we love going outside and playing. And so some of it's, you know, playing with toys they already have, letting them do make believe, you know, and when we're not spending as much on the subscriptions, on the other things, you know, when we're getting out paper and coloring stuff and doing arts, you know, they're more creative and they're playing together and they get to use their imagination. And it's amazing when we don't require outside stimuli to entertain us, but when we come up with that entertainment ourselves, you know, just how much fun it can be.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't, the slowing down doesn't have to be boring. I think it can actually be more fun, and just not having to have so much scheduled, then we can actually take the time to do stuff that costs less anyway and enjoy what actually we have or is out there. Cause sometimes we're so busy, we don't even enjoy what we do have. And so our Saturdays and practicing that Sabbath and slowing down has been a way for us to also slow down the spending, slow down the pace as well.
Yeah, that's great. I love that answer. I think that's hopefully when my wife and I have kids, that's sort of what our weekends will look like too. She's an avid reader, loves to read and loves to go to the library. And I know that that'll be a part of our kids' lives as well. And so I love that, just like encouraging that imagination. And then I think too, it doesn't bring them up in the mindset of, you know, if I need something, I can just get it with money. You know, I think that like a lot of times we do operate out of convenience, or if we're living in a fast way, we go for the quickest option. And a lot of times that costs money, you know, fast food or whatever. And it takes time to make food, but oftentimes that could be more rewarding and you know what's in it. Usually it's better for your body too. So there's just so many benefits. So I love that you shared that. The book is called Healthy Money. Where can people purchase this and how can people connect with both you and Roz if they want to?
Yeah, it's available on Amazon.com, also on the publisher Invite Resource. If you want to buy in bulk, there's some bulk discounts on Invite Resource, but Amazon's a quick and easy way to get it as well. My husband Rosario and I are both on Facebook. Roz has a website, rosariopicardo.com, for his Picardo coaching. And I've got deeprootsfinancial.com for some of my finance stuff. But we've got stuff out there. We're starting to do some of these money in a minute is something that we're trying on Facebook right now too. Okay. So if you want these quick little 1 minute money tidbits, those are something we're doing on Facebook as well. So you can find us there easily too.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much. It was great catching up with you again. Thanks for joining the show. And
thanks,
I'm sure you'll
so
be back
having
on.
Me, Cole. It's been just a joy, and excited for you and all the things you and your family are doing.
Great. Well, thank you so much. I'm sure we'll have you back on again down the road whenever you've got some more money wisdom to share with us.
Thank you.
So much wisdom in that conversation from Callie. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I know I certainly got a lot out of it. And I definitely encourage you to check out their latest book, Healthy Money. The links for where to buy that are going to be in the show notes, as well as some links to connect with both Callie and her husband, Rosario. I certainly encourage you to do that. If you enjoyed the show, share this with a friend who you think might get something out of it. I think regardless of what stage of life we're in, whether we're married, single, dating, does not matter. A conversation like this about money, I think, can always be beneficial. And if you and I are not connected yet, I would love for that to change. You can check me out on social media, on Twitter and Instagram at Cole Claiborne. You can also visit my website, coleclaiborne.com. And there's also a link in the show notes to sign up for my Substack newsletter. I would love for you to be a part of that community as well. So one way or another, I would love to connect with you. And if you enjoyed this show, I would love for you to share this with a friend and to let me know that you checked it out and enjoyed it. That means a lot. But that's all for me. Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you guys have a great week and find some time to relax. And we'll catch you next time.